Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, colleagues from the AG, stakeholders from the media, everybody, you're welcome. Purpose of the meeting today, ladies and gentlemen, or the primary purpose of the meeting today was to have a discussion around the annual report of Parliament, financial year 16 and 17. We must indicate to the department or to the officials of Parliament that we had a briefing session with the AG yesterday for their take on the annual reports. We also had a briefing from the stakeholders from our side, being the researcher and the content advisor. So members of Parliament are quite au fait with what's in the annual report, is what I'm trying to say to you, that they, I think they sufficiently empowered. So what you give us today, you must expect is going to be challenged. Expect that it's going to be challenged if members are not happy with it, because we have prepared adequately for it. But before we get there, we've got two sets of minutes, honourable members, that we hope to get through. And also, you'll be aware that the co-chairperson of this committee, Honourable Mohai, in the last couple of weeks or months has been reassigned to be the chief whip of the NCOP, and therefore the NCOP component of this committee had no chair, and they have subsequently taken a decision on who will co-chair with us. So we will do that initially, just elect and confirm the co-chair and allow the co-chair to join us. Immediately thereafter, we'll go to the minutes. Immediately after the minutes, we are going to give the department about 45 minutes to do your presentation. You'll have about 45 minutes for discussions. But I welcome chairperson of the NCOP, and the speaker, I suppose, will be joining us. You'll just indicate to us whether you want to, when we get there, whether you want to kickstart the proceedings to give a political overview, and then we hand over to the staff. Alternatively, we can ask the officials to do their presentation, and you can do an overview. But it's entirely up to you whether you want to do it first or second. No, it's all of us made an attendance, so we'll play it in that fashion. I'm sure members are fine, unless members have a preference in terms of how our guests do their presentation, but it'll be entirely up to them. So we will start formally. Welcome, Speaker. Thank you very much for being here, and welcome to the Chair of the NCOP. Our colleagues from the administration, thank you very much and welcome. And once again, our colleagues from the Auditor General's office, welcome. Members, let us start. Speaker, I was, before you were coming in formally, just getting a sense of whether you'd want to do a political overview before we get into the admin side of it, or we'd rather do the admin and then you guys do yours. But we're easy on that one. So you will do that initially. We are quite easy on it. what we're doing, speaker, is just agreeing on the process before you even start. We just want to agree on the process, not no, that's fine. All right.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We, as the executive authority, asked for the opportunity, and I don't want us to fight over this. Who asked for this opportunity? We asked to come here because we believe that it would be appropriate for that, for us as the executive authority of Parliament, together with our team, to actually have a relationship, in particular with this committee, to on an ongoing basis be in touch and be on the same page about issues relating to the finances and the management thereof of Parliament. The second issue is that this committee itself is a new committee formed at the point at which the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act had been adopted. And it was out of a firm belief that it was necessary for us to have such a legislation that many years ago we embarked on a debate about the need and ended up, after many years and amendments and so on, this bill, was finally adopted as an act. Of course, we've now made progress in terms of the implementation thereof, including the creation of this joint standing committee, which for us is a very, very welcome development. The relationship between us as Parliament and Treasury of Government in relation to financial matters, in as far as we Parliament are affected in relation to the national budget, for us is critical. Hence the importance of the relationship between the executive authority and the parliamentary service with this committee in terms of its role out of that act. I say this because the relationship between Parliament and Treasury in the executive, which has a constitutional role to play for the whole state, has been a difficult one for a long time. So much so that, in fact, as we came to the end of last year and entered into this year, on budgetary issues as relating now to the budget of Parliament, we were in a very tight spot. And we believe that as we finished the meeting on Monday night with the Minister of Finance and Treasury in terms of issues relating to the budget of Parliament, and of course historical issues which we had to lay on the table for the understanding of the background to the Minister of Finance, we were really only then beginning to feel like we are making a breakthrough, only on Monday night. So I'd like to start there so that we all understand where we are coming from as executive authority and the staff that is led by the Secretary to Parliament and the CFO on the other side there. So we are on the same wavelength about that and how we approach that. We are at a point in terms of the strategic objectives of Parliament where, as we had adopted that in 2014, by the end of last year, it was clear to us that given the financial state in the country, in the world, in the continent, in South Africa as such, we needed to re-strategize, re-look at issues of new priorities within the context of the new realities, because the whole country had now had to be geared differently from when we arrived in 2014. And so it was with that in mind that last month we sent, and I'd like the Acting Secretary to Parliament and the Chairperson to add on this, we had to rethink, re-strategize, re-prioritize with the realities of the time. We had to say to ourselves, yes, this is what we agreed in 2014, the situation was different at that time. We are now here and the whole situation needs a relook.
Yeah.
And so we engage in that kind of process and exercise of relooking at our within the tight purse, which is not tight only for Treasury, it's tight for us as Parliament, because to start with we had suffered cuts not only over the years, but we had suffered cuts in particular in the last financial year that had led us to have a very difficult time also with our workers, because there wasn't even enough money for them to get the kind of increases that they were requiring or asking for or demanding from Parliament. But of course we can also say to this committee that we believe that in terms of labor force issues we're in a better space than sometime last year, and we believe that we will be making a breakthrough in that regard as we move on. So I thought I must say those introductory remarks before we get into maybe more detailed parts of our interaction with yourselves, and would like you to feel free to ask us questions so that we can share with you based on where you are coming from. Chapter 3. I think when we get to the question and answer session.
Okay, thank
but
you.
But I'd like maybe the chairperson, I mean the acting secretary of Parliament, to get into the slides under your guidance.
No, thank you very much. We will do that, Honorable Stenhuisen. We will do that. I was just going to suggest, do you want to make a close? I was just going to suggest, let's deal with a very quick formality of appointing, or I mean of electing the co-chair, and then we'll get into what you want to do. But let's hear you, Honorable Senator.
Sorry, Chair, I've lost place by where we are on the agenda. I mean, I wanted to raise something under the second item there around the adoption of the agenda. I just want to seek some clarity from you, Chair. On the program that I have that was in the file, we were also today supposed to be receiving a report by the Audit Committee on the outcomes into the investigation into the various allegations levelled against the Secretary to Parliament. But I see that that's not on tonight's agenda. Did I miss out on something? I think that report was promised to us at the last meeting, and I think it's important that we engage with that particular report as it pertains to the Secretary of Parliament, and I just need to get some clarity of why we're not dealing with it this evening as well.
We will get to that. There's correspondence to that effect that we were going to table formally to the House today, and we can decide how we're going to take it forward. We received correspondence yesterday, the day before, did it Monday? That we would have formally tabled to the House today. Can we then do the appointment of a co-chair, get straight into the business of the day, and then we'll defer our minutes for later? Is that okay? Aura. As we were saying earlier on, that the co-chair, Honorable Mohai, has been redeployed, and there was a vacancy, and I'm looking at our colleagues from the NCOP to get an indication if you have decided on who will be the replacement for Mohai, and if there is such a decision, if somebody can make a nomination. Honorable Matana.
Thanks, Chair. I hereby nominate Honorable Monaketi for the position of co-chair of the committee.
Do we have anybody that supports that nomination?
I support that
nomination. Anybody have a different nomination? We all accept it. Thank you. We then will, for the record, indicate that there were no opposing names, and therefore there was no need for an election. Chairperson was about. Yeah, this is your place. Come and take your place, Father.
Thank you very much. I am really honored to have been elected into this position, and do look forward to working with all of you to steer the ship in the right direction, the ship in this parliament, so that at the end of the day we are able to serve our people to the fullest. So once more, thank you very much, my co-chairperson. I am more than ready indeed to make sure that together we move Parliament in the right direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We have a co-chair that will obviously help us in the process. Honourable members, in terms of apologies, we received an apology from Honourable September and Honourable Coleman. They are busy with other parliamentary business, and we are hoping that other members will join us as we move along. Those are the two apologies we received, September and Coleman. And somebody said to me, Gayla, is there any other apologies other than September and Coleman?
Thanks, Chair. And Honourable Gayla is on committee oversight out of the country, thanks.
Thank you very much. I think those apologies are accepted, I'm sure. We will manage it accordingly. And then, Honourable CNA, are you correct? At our last meeting, we had, as a committee, taken a decision to ask the Audit Committee to come and update us on the work that they were doing in terms of the disciplinary matter. We wrote a letter to that effect, and on the 23rd, which was Monday, we received a letter from the chairperson of the committee indicating to us that they have a meeting with the executive authority tomorrow, the 26th, where they will formally present their findings, and therefore felt that it was appropriate that they take it to the executive authority, and then the executive authority will decide how to process it. But that's going to take place tomorrow. That's the letter that was given to us. We're formally putting it on the table. I thought it was a reasonable proposal, but if members feel otherwise, it is. But we are formally presenting the letter from Mrs. K. Ndlulwa. Honourable Senator.
Yeah, I'm happy if that's fine. It's no problem. But I mean, I just want to caution something's rather odd here. Because the last meeting we had at V454, we were informed, I think it was by the Acting Secretary, that the investigation had been completed. Now, given the gravity of the situation and the limbo that we're now operating in with the Secretary, is he in, is he out, is he guilty, is he not, is he coming back, is he being given a package, all these questions are floating around, and I think that we need to finalise this matter as quickly as possible. And so, I mean, when you said that, it looked like the executive authority were taken by surprise as well. Maybe I'm misreading the body language. But, I mean, this thing needs to be brought to a head. This institution needs a head of the administration. If Mr. Mgidlana is coming back, we must know that. If he's not, we must know that. So I'd urge that this is expedited.
All right. When we do get to that point of discussions, maybe you can respond to it. So it's something that you'll respond to at the time. Is it all right that we park it until we get to discussions? Thank you very much. So we'll also supply copies of that letter to members, but it's now formally accepted. Can we then, Honourable Acting Chair, Acting Secretary, it's 5 o'clock. Is it okay if we give you 45 minutes to do your presentation? Is that sufficient time? That would be nice. After that, we will then get into the discussions. And you and your team can take us through your slides. I'm assuming honourable members have got the slides that have been presented. Yes, we have. They're in your pack.
Thank you very much.
Just before you start, they're in your pack. Yes, they are in the pack. Now I'm looking at honourable Singh. It's fine. Continue, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon to honourable members and Speaker and Chair. The report obviously covers the past year. And because it's an annual report that has already been on the website, I will not necessarily read word for word of the slides, but I will just flag some of the targets that we have met and provide explanations on the targets that we have not met. We'll also look at the budget that is spent against the targets and the APP. The first slide summarizes the strategic outcome-oriented goals of the FID Parliament. That we have shared with the committee quite often when we made presentations here. And the second slide, if you go on, what we've done here is just an infograph to show some of the work that we've achieved, and this, I must hasten to say the report has been audited, and this will have been confirmed to the auditors. With respect to oversight and accountability, we report that we reflect the oversight visits, quarterly performance oversight reports, strategic plan analysis reports, annual performance and oversight reports, statutory appointment reports. And what we try to do is to keep our presentation on at least reflecting on the core business of Parliament. This is an area where members of Parliament execute their constitutional mandate in the House, in the committees, in the oversight visits. Indeed, the question would arise as to whether do we do bean counting. However, we do not do bean counting. These are all the outcomes of the work of Parliament in the year 2016-17. The next slide shows us the number of bills that have been passed. That doesn't mean this is equal to the number of bills that have been introduced. And those, we divide them between the NA as well as the NCOP. In it, we try to link it back with exactly what the objective of those legislations are in policy making. And then we outline exactly those areas and explain that over and above that, in that year, there was an implementation of the high-level panel, which was assessing the legislative impact in the past 20 years. This area, we think, is going to be the legacy area or the legacy report that is given from the 5th Parliament to the 6th Parliament. And also, the outcomes of this panel will also inform what the 6th Parliament should look for and give an assessment of the legislations that have been passed by this Parliament. The following slide, we try and break it down into the various engagements. This was quite an extensive project, which entailed a mass participation of the whole country, if one were to put it. And we provided there the number of encounters and interactions that were held by the high-level panel, which constituted of independent persons. Already there is a process through which this report will be processed and handed over to Parliament, of course, and the legislatures. In that, we actually do indicate the thematic areas that the high-level panel covered, and there were 4 working groups, and that slide outlines those particular working groups.
The next slide, we then look at public participation, which is a strategic objective of this parliament, and actually also the mandate of parliament. And we tried to look at how much does parliament interact and interface with the public, and how much do we involve public participation in formation of legislation and in ensuring that the public is exposed to the work of parliament. Those assessed numbers straddle, of course, between the platforms that we use in terms of communication, the website, YouTube, Twitter, and of course, increasing Facebook. I would say the right part of the slide, as on my right part, your left side, you'll see that there's quite an increase on platforms that one can refer to as public platforms, and that includes social media. To date, we can report quite confidently that access to parliament is increasing. Access of the population to the work of parliament is increasing, and those numbers do speak for themselves. We're tracking the numbers, and in that, what we've also done is we've instituted a survey that is conducted to the Ipsos Machina, into which we buy questions that then scientifically assess the extent to which people say they access the information of parliament. And in that survey, they also indicate how they prefer to access the work and information of parliament. And that is a report that I did say, I think, in the last meeting that we will share with the committee, the results of which will only come in on the first week of December, because currently they're doing field work. And that will also provide scientific data that we hope as officials that it can be sustained and it should be sustained as a longitudinal research for this state parliament, and it becomes a legacy report as well as a program that will be adopted by the sixth parliament. With respect to the various areas where there has been activity is then the ability of parliament to appoint statutory bodies, and we enumerate those. The next slide talks on the strategic objective corporate governance. In that, we report on the legislative sector activities. We also report on the FMPPLA and all the work that has been done around cooperative government, national, provincial, and local. And we think that there is quite a lot of extensive work that's been done. Part of that is the production of the draft bill on the legislature that is trying to establish cohesion and some form of harmonization between the nine legislatures, 10 by adding on parliament. The next strategic objective that we assessed, and it is reported in the annual report, is the level of international participation and engagement by our parliament. And in that, we enumerate various international agreements as analyzed by our team. And we provide also the number of policy briefs that were produced by staff. And on the left-hand side, that is my left, we actually outline the platforms that Parliament engages on. And these are all the various platforms and various forums, both multilateral and bilateral, for us that our members engage in, which have a direct impact on the work of Parliament. The following slide, what we summarize there is our continued effort to build a capable parliamentary service. This would be the work of officials. In it, we provide a summary that says in 2016-17, we had 49 targets. We met 49 targets. And 2005-16, we had 45.4 targets that were met. And that we will outline each of those in the next slide on part two of our presentation. Moving on to the part two, we look at first the overall institutional performance, that is a summary. We have made a comparison between 15-16 and 16-17. With respect to our strategy for 15-16, we had a total of 33 target indicators. And out of that, we had 15 targets that we met. And then in 16-17, we had put out 41 indicators that we measured against.
and out of that we met 20 of those. If I were to make it even simpler, 6 and 17, we had 41 indicators. We met 20 indicators, we didn't meet 21 indicators. And we will explain later on in the slide as to which are those. And I also want to hasten to say that trend line doesn't necessarily compare year to year, because all we're comparing is that we had 33 target indicators in 15-16, and then we increased those to 41 indicators. Even then, at least we still match close on 50% of the targets. If we move on to specific programs, Program 1 is responsible strategy and leadership and governance. And in the year that we're reporting under, we were targeting 2, and we achieved 1 out of that, and precisely 2 indicators met, and of course we exceeded our targets, and 1 indicator was not met. And this focus also on the most highlights out of that area is the outcomes of the PVO, which is the Parliamentary Budget Office, which exceeded its target by 23 analytical reports given to the committees that they serve. The next slide explains and outlines some of the actuals against the targets, and we explain the variance for each one of that. Governance and document tabled for referral. This includes our financial reports, it includes our annual reports, it includes our quarter reports, and our monthly reports. And in it, we realized that there was an ineffectiveness in which we actually table some of these governance reports. We put together remediation around those areas. And often it's got to do with the timing around which we submit the report and the timing around which the report is tabled on the ATC. We put some remediation around that area, which we are improving on. Program two reports largely on the training of members. This is quite an extensive and quite an elaborate program, which is coordinated under the legislative sector and integrates all the 9 plus 10 legislature, which is Parliament. And out of that, they set out to meet 5 indicators, and in that we have met 4. And with 1 still outstanding. The one that's outstanding often is ultimately the result of having put out the number of members that will pass certain programs. There's a direct benefit, Jefferson, if I were to say. A lot of members do actually take up those programs, and in fact, they take them, the members are across the whole sector. And this is an area, this is a project that is funded by the EU. That we do flag that when the EU funding stops, it is a program that will have to be integrated into the baseline of Parliament, and it will have to be budgeted for accordingly, because it is central to the empowerment of parliamentarians and their growth, as well as their skills development, and us making sure that our parliamentarians are up to par with what's expected of the work they have to do. So it's something we've also flagged with National Treasury, because if we don't integrate the budget into the baseline, that project or the program will actually fail in due course. The program two is also responsible for compliance to the prescripts and the regulations of the FMPPLA, and that talks to our ability our ability for turnaround on processing of tenders and payments thereof. And out of that, our actual is 6, so there is a variance of 40%, which is a deficiency in terms of how we have met and how we've not met the target. Going on to the next branch or program, core business constitutes of committees, researchers, legal advice, procedural advice, and oversight, public participation, improvement of lawmaking. The core business loop had put out 22 indicators for that program for that year 16-17, and out of that we met 17 indicators, and we'll provide details of which ones are those, and I think we have referred to them in the past, even in our last reporting to the committee. And the next slide gives that breakdown. in it we termed ourselves, and one can summarize it as a service charter for us, to say we set aside certain times for us to fulfill certain objectives. And it's outlined in that slide. The deficiencies in here would be in the next slide, where we talk about the areas where we've not met our target, and I'll move on to that. The last four indicators, I think we did present to the committee the way in which they were described in our technical descriptors. We had referred to them as models. And in fact, the report says not met. It is not necessarily true that Parliament has not done public participation, committee meetings have not set, and so on and so forth. What we have done is, in the review of the strategy with the executive authority, we have refined the predetermined objectives to say we want to be measuring models. So it's an incorrect target to say we measure a model. So you can't measure models, we must actually measure what you do with models. So we have revised those to actually produce what you would call a performance indicator, which we will define with time going forward. And we have actually decided that we're going to measure it differently, have indices than have models. Hence, when the Auditor General measured us and asked us to give evidence of models, we provided them with various committees, oversight work, and so on and so forth. And we actually acknowledge that we'll have to revisit that area, and that's an area we have to revisit quite soon. We've been given approval to revisit it. Program four, largely looking at support services, we have agreed to performance of seven indicators, and out of that we have met four, and the three indicators were not met. Quite clearly, it was nothing complex. We can say that both the stakeholder engagement plan and the communication strategy for Parliament until 2019, those were produced, but they were not produced within the time frames. Hence, we missed the deadline and therefore not met the target. And then we had outlined a training of communication and media for chairs of committees, and we failed to convene that. And then the last one was that when we were assessing the extent to which people know about Parliament, when we did a survey, the survey came down slightly, very slightly, lower than what we had targeted. And that is shown in the next slide. And those are the targets not met. So with respect to the population that is aware of business of Parliament, we were short by 1% of the population. We had put our target at 10.75. And the question can be asked, when we decided on these targets, what tools did we put together to make sure that we meet the target? And that's the area we're looking at correcting. The program five, associated services, straightforward. It is really the one indicator, turnaround time, around the transfer of budget, or budget to political parties. That's just a direct transfer. Turnaround time on reimbursing members, and then of course the publishing of the members' handbook, which we publish to articulate the benefits entitlements of members. We do measure ourselves around those areas so that members are not stranded and are not irate when we do not reinvest them. There's a whole process. I think we had an extensive discussion on the fund transfer to parties and how we actually execute that. The next part of the presentation is on the annual financial statement. First, I'd like to emphasize the fact that we still retain the turnaround of paying suppliers in 30 days, but in this area we sort of did have a deficiency, primarily because we had some invoices that had big amounts. The amount, it wasn't the number of invoices, it was the amounts that we had actually been owing to certain service providers, and the period within which we took to address some of the queries we had, because we did have queries. And the next slide, what we're showing is the gradual improvement of our work as Parliament. Chair and Speaker and Chair, I think we should be proud and say to the honourable members that there has been a great improvement in the professionalising services, or shall I say professionalising the officials and the way in which we work through having to develop a strategic plan, to develop the annual performance plan, and to move our outcomes, or to move our targets from just being transactional to try and make them outcome-based. And we have actually continuously monitored the implementation of our action plans that come from the Auditor General. We have also tried to identify remediation and improve our internal controls and address inadequacies. Hence, Parliament has been consistently been able to receive that type of an audit report. And the challenge now is how do we sustain this report, the clean audit report by Parliament. And we think as officials, we can only sustain it if we have a growing relationship and also support from a committee like the Joint Standing Committee. So the next slide just shows the annual appropriation, which is what the final budget of Parliament was. As we speak now, we get that from National Treasury, the 1.6 billion, and the actual amount what we spent is 1.6 billion. The statutory appropriation, and this we have spoken about it, that is compensation of members, which has historically been overstated, and underspending has since been always been surrendered to the National Revenue Fund. This is an area where, Chair, we've been saying to National Treasury, the fact that we have a parliamentary stress with respect to personnel, and the fact that Treasury did cut our personnel budget without informing us, this is an area where they could be readjusting our appropriated funds to ensure that we balance the deficits that we're experiencing. So 98% of Parliament's revenue is appropriated and only 2% comes directly from the NRM. And the expenditure is as it stands. Of course, we have other receipts, that is other revenue. This will include interest that is gained as well as donor fund, which we report on. The next slide gives a summary of the compensation of the summary of expenditure, actual expenditure. And these are actual amounts. The various amounts in terms of compensation of employees is at minus 102%. 12%, minus 12%. Compensation of members is sitting at a variance of 21%, which is a positive variance. Goods and services, similarly 12%. Transfer to non-profit organizations, this is actually how we tabulate or how we name political parties. Acquisition of property and plants and equipment at minus 83%. Purchase of intangible, negative 100%. In the next slide, we were asked, obviously, these are the explanations, and I will not read them line by line. These are explanations that were given with respect to reasons for variances, and they sit on our annual report, which is already a public document, and the remedial actions that we are outlining. The remedial actions will obviously be monitored. Where we can action them, we will action them. But a lot of this has got dependency on in terms of the National Treasury meeting, as well as making sure that our budget is corrected appropriately. The overall of financial position, that's the next slide. Here what we're showing, Chair, is that if we're not burdened with medical provision for members, as well as the Parliament and provincial legislature. The next pie chart shows the real net, the budget, the net assets of Parliament. So our budget is being inflated primarily because we're carrying your medical aid, we're carrying benefits of former members, and we're carrying mostly about 934 members who are receiving the subsidy through the budget of Parliament. And we think, and we know, and we've raised it with Treasury, this distorts the budget and it has to be corrected. There has been a positive response from the National Treasury, both technical personnel and at the level of the minister. I'll move to the statement of financial position. And with respect to the inventories, I'll just talk to the amount thereof. 2016, 969, and that has been a decrease of 34% when we compare to the past year. The receivable from non-exchange transactions from 18.3 to 2.4, and we do explain that there is a decrease of 87%, which was coming from the right of the no work, no pay debt, and of course other debts. The next slide, which shows the receivable from exchange transactions. The receivable for exchange transaction refers to debts from sales and telephone used by political parties as well as accrued income interest. And that those are the figures that we share with you, and they are actually in the annual report. Prepayments, 2016 it was 6.7, 2017 it was 7.5. And this refers to the prepayments relating to payments made in advance before the services are rendered. Some of those are the services that we receive from DIRGO with respect to the use of the lounges and other travels that we pay through them. The next slide looks at the assets that we hold for sale. And we explain that there is no movement as a result of vehicles which we have approved for disposal, and we have not sold some of those, which we will later on. Cash and cash equivalent, the difference, the amount is given there, and cash and cash equivalent decreased by 6% due to mainly the use of parliamentary earnings to fund its shortfall from appropriated budget granted by National Treasury. The following slide talks to the property and plant and equipment, a reduction from 106 to 993.2 million. And then, of course, intangible assets, that we see that there is a resultant decrease of 7% compared to the past year. And heritage and assets, there was a question that we do have heritage and assets. Yes, we have. And that includes your environmental, the natural, scientific, technological assets, and all of that that we have on our asset register. And that there's a depreciation of 8,000 movement is in addition for the year. The statement of financial position, finance less obligation. Finance lease liabilities consist of cell phones, tablets, modems, contracts, and the average lease term of 2 years. And these, there is a decrease of 59% compared to the previous year. Then, of course, we have payables from exchange transactions. Those figures speak for themselves. Can we go to the next slide? VAT, that's just a common standard there. And then payables from non-exchangeable transactions, the figures are shown there, and we do actually give an explanation with respect to leave days that are calculated that add on to the non-exchangeable transactions. The unspent statutory appropriation, as indicated that the unspent statutory appropriation increased by an amount of 30 million as a result of an increase in the annual budget from 503 million to 529. And then, of course, we indicate the fact that members' salaries were not increased, and the payment of loss of office gratuity also decreased from 6.97 to 5.9 in 16-17. Current employees' benefits, employees' benefit obligations, we do actually look at largely that area is really on the post-retirement medical aid plan, which we referred to, and then, of course, members' gratuity, which we referred to. The next slide is on disclosure, which is, I think, the last slide, if not last but one. I think we're indicating there that there has been an increase with respect to litigation and for 16-17, compared to 15-16. And then we were asked, of course, to disclose litigation and give an indication of the legal expenses that we're incurring as Parliament. There is an increase, quite a massive increase of litigation, particularly around staff. We've included there what the reasons were, the Labour Court case of the researchers, and I think members did ask us to quantify that and include it in our budget. We've done so. And then the other one is a contestation on the employment of protection service officers who've taken us to the Labour Court. Parliament is still still opposing the case, and the case is yet to be finalised. Irregular expenditures. I must quickly say that compared to 2006, if we compare 16, I'm sorry, and 17, there has been an increase. We've been able to resolve 84% or to reduce that by 84%. We do explain exactly what that irregular expenditure is a result of. And we put together a governance and assurance committee that looked at issues of non-compliance, and we've got details of what entailed the non-compliance. And we have actually said we are putting controls with respect to the supply chain management, formal training on ensuring that our FIT committees are properly trained, and sampling of purchase orders and how these are raised. Because this is often a case where we have big programs like taking Parliament to people, and we have challenges of collection of verifiable receipts, as well as when we enter into speedy procurement of products that we need at a particular point in time. But the Governance and Assurance Committee has actually gone through the process, and we have actually made recommendations to the Executive Authority, given explanation, held a meeting with the Executive Authority, who asked us to explain each and every little case. I must also hasten to say that this amount was not like only incurred in 16-17. Some of the irregular expenditure emanated from 2011-2010 on CREDA and on some of the tenders that we kept on renewing with the hope of training and making sure that we have internalized skills around printing of certain things like our Hansard and ATCs and our custom papers. And because we kept on renewing certain contracts because we had sole providers, it was indicated by the Auditor General that it will become an irregular expenditure. And we have given such explanations to the Executive Authority and many other related matters. The next slide on fruitless expenditure that talks to the fact that there is quite a lot of loss in terms of our crockery, primarily that our outsourced areas of catering, Parliament has to rent crockery, plates and everything, and we're finding it a challenge that a lot of our crockery just leaves the precinct. And therefore there's quite a lot of thinking around how we can abate that, and there's losses that we incur with respect to that area. Human resources management, there's a summary of the breakdown, Chairperson, of our personnel costs, and I want to go to slide number 43, the next slide. This is an indication of the key drivers of Parliament's budget. Key drivers of Parliament's budget, at least if we exclude members, you will notice, members of the committee, that our key drivers of Parliament personnel is around the C band and the D band. These are your researchers, content advisors, librarians, an area that obviously is an area that's got a long body of a high body population of professional people, and this is where the personnel budget is largely incurred. That's the bulk of our employees. You'll see that there's 739, they're accounting for 406 million, and 225 accounting for 244 million of our personnel budget. That's the cost of per employee. We provide the cost per employee on the latter part or the last part of the column. Then the next slide shows the vacancy rate. In the last presentation we did to the Joint Standing Committee, we provided members with the organogram. We provided members with a breakdown of the individual salaries of the individual member of staff. We also indicated that some of the positions were frozen. We indicated some of the positions that we had to fill, primarily because we had identified them as critical posts. And at the time of reporting, we had active vacant posts that were 67. That number has reduced, and even the frozen, some frozen positions have been unfrozen, particularly these positions that talk to the support for members, and these are core business. Members would have noticed that we've had a lot of advertising, and we've also had a lot of advertising around core business, around content advisors, around researchers, and legal advice. So that number of 67 active vacant positions have actually been decreased. The annual turnover rate, as per when we reported, we had had 46 resignations, the total turnover rate percentage was sitting at 3.34. We were asked by the committee to say what are the reasons. In the last presentation, which focused only on HR matters, we provided honorable members with the reasons for resignations, and I remember the committee also raised the fact that our contracting is quite erratic and needs to be addressed, and we did say that we are actually doing a whole overhaul of the whole human resources area, wherein we're going to review the contracts, particularly around core business area where members' needs to be supported in a sustainable manner. So there will be a complete change on that. And then we also indicated to yourselves that we are sitting with an employee composite. We are sitting at a grand total of warm bodies of 1,336 at 2016, 2017, even now still. The next slide shows that employment equity. We try by all means to try and break down our population of employment equity in line with the provincial demographics as well as the parliament's targets, where we obviously are not showing good or strength, shall I say, it's possibly with employees with disabilities. The percentages or the numbers are quite low there. We also are not showing gender equity with respect to employment at a senior management level and decision management level. The bulk of our concentration of, shall I say, some employment equity is within the professional area of skilled and highly skilled categories, which is your level C and D. However, our HR division has now developed a whole HRD strategy, which in good time will shape with the committee once the executive authority has actually seen and approved it. And on this note, I think this is the last slide, and I wish to thank you, Chair.
You've done no more additions from your team?
Sure, the CFO would like to add something.
No? All right. Honourable members, here we have it. It is 5:30. If we're going to work, and we had agreed that we would finish at 7 o'clock according to our program, and we will have to factor in time for the speaker and the chair of the NCOP. So can we agree that amongst ourselves we'll use about an hour? Is that fine? All right, and then we'll try and share it. We have about 9 of us. We'll try and share it equitably. Honourable Stena, is there anybody else that wants to follow? And then Honourable Singh, and then everybody wants to speak. Okay? Right, let's start with Stena, and then we'll follow Singh, and then follow Wharton. Then we'll allow them to respond, and then we'll take the next set. Otherwise, we'll lose the questions. Honourable Stena.
Thank you, Chair, and at the outset to thank the Acting Secretary once again for her very concise and deep dive into Parliament. It's appreciated. The first thing I want to talk about is Program 3, Core Business, which I think is essential to our job as Parliament. And I think if we look at the Ipsos reports and some of the findings made there, it's very clear that, you know, a lot of the misinformation around Parliament, or the lack of understanding, is around our core business, what we should be doing. So only 20 of the 41 targets, only 20 targets of the 41 were met, and core business is obviously, you know, key to what we do, and yet this is the area where the biggest capacity constraints are and where the most posts have been frozen. So it's hard to understand why we're freezing posts in an area where, you know, which should be our core function as an institution. And obviously that's been cited in several of the failure to meet targets as capacity constraints for why we haven't been able to achieve those. So I think those, if we could just get some explanation around there, what strategy has been put in place. Then I just on your slide on page 4, oversight and accountability, I think it's worth noting 380 member statements, only 119 ministerial responses. But I think my question comes in at the bottom of that, the block that says NA written questions, 2,760. And I just wonder whether you have a measurement of how many of those questions have actually been responded to and what the quality of those responses are. I think that we've seen, certainly over the course of the last 2 years, a decline in the quality of responses from the executive. Also, the number of questions that are answered actually are not very good. So while you have the oversight being done, the accountability is not forthcoming. And I think we need to start finding a way to be able to measure that in the way that we report going forward. Program 1, strategic leadership and governance, an effective tabling process around the requirements of the FMPPLA. Chair, you'll know this is what I was discussing with the Auditor General. Gave you 100% for compliance with legislation, where it's very clear by your own admission that compliance with legislation has not been what it should be. So I'm still flummoxed by that. And then my last question on this first round is public participation on social media and obviously your communication strategy. I have a major problem with the way your communications is done. It's public money that's used. Parliament is a multi-party institution. There's an inherent bias in the way in which your communication strategy is being deployed, both on Twitter and in various releases that are done. I'll give you an example. Large chunks of members of the opposition are ignored when speeches are being made, yet the executive are rigorously retweeted by Parliament. And I'm happy to provide you with examples of those. I've been collecting them over the course of the last 3 months. Clearly an inherent bias towards a single party within the House, and I think it's wrong for a parliamentary communication service to be operating in a biased manner like that. The same applies to press statements that arise from Parliament, where statements go out saying that the committee has resolved X, the committee has resolved Y, when in fact committees have not even grappled with that issue. No resolutions passed. It generally is the musings and opinions of chairpersons of committees that are being touted out there as committee resolutions. It's wrong, it's dishonest, and I think that practice needs to stop because it's really not a true reflection of what Parliament has been doing. It's rather the views and opinions of a single politician. I'll leave it there for now. I do have others, but I want to give others a chance.
No, that's fine. Before I recognize somebody else, I think these must be answered. There were quite a few of them. They'll get lost. Do you want to respond to these? And what you will then do is record for follow-up, Honourable Stennis, if there are.
There was one, the one outstanding. We were informed yesterday there was a Member of Parliament that had been doing business with Parliament. We'd like an understanding about who that Member of Parliament is, what the circumstances are, and how that was allowed to get through supply chain management, particularly given that, you know, MPs should be flagged on the system. Thank
you. Over to you, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair. My colleagues will also assist with this. Let me answer the frozen posts. First is indeed the targets not met. We have acknowledged that there are certain targets that have not been met, and there was a time where the process of if the houses have adopted a strategy and you have defined targets in a manner that is not appropriate, we've had to get into an engagement as to when do we revisit those. Because there were ones that were, let me give you an example, the stakeholder engagement plan. Parliament has never had an institutional stakeholder engagement plan that is applied properly. When we started, it appeared we were too ambitious, and we thought we would finish that in a year or so, but it needed extensive work. And we had put a particular target, meet, develop and implement this stakeholder engagement plan. Then we decided as managers that we have to revisit those areas, which we have done. It's only now in September, when we're doing the media review with the executive authority, that we have to change that. And the Auditor General had said that they will work with us to refine the predetermined objectives. The other weakness which we are correcting was the indicator descriptor. This is saying, how are you going to measure this? And whether we use complex formulas or we do a narrative to measure it. And those are the areas that we spent September, the 2 days we worked with the executive authority to refine. And we will actually be, as I was saying, we've submitted a revised APP, which goes up till 2019. That will be approved by both houses. The second one, indeed, Honourable Member, you're correct. Hence, when we froze 67 posts, we went back to division managers and systematically unfreezing those positions. I can say in the past 3 months, we've had advertisements of researchers and content advisors. I think on average, Ms. Beck is here, she can assist with that. We are interviewing content advisors and researchers, and I'm sure she can even give more clarity on that. And I do know that we've also made advertise some positions of legal advisor, some number, and Ms. Beck can give comments on that. Indeed, we are aware that there's times where Parliament has got high impact work, and the number of people that we use are stressed and stretched. However, I think CFO can talk to it. When National Treasury cut our budget, they didn't inform us. They cut $33 million on the first year, which is 2014, and they took all of that from personnel. Because they looked at Parliament, they said we're a bloated structure. So they did accept the fact that they hadn't even communicated with us. And they are aiming to cut this year $133 million, CFO, or $108 million. And when we had a discussion meeting with them, thanks to the executive authority, we had a meeting with them on Monday evening. The DDG there acknowledged the fact that what happens is when they decide that the fiscus is under strain and they decide on 1%, they just look across. They have no knowledge of the first thing that reaches or first thing they see is the many warm bodies in the departments. They start with personnel. So hence they have encouraged us to have one-on-one meetings with the technical officials. We are having meetings with the technical people in National Treasury. So why am I saying this? I'm saying this because there's a deficit in personnel. Hence we started by freezing. And as and when we see that we're saving, we systematically unfreeze. And I must honestly say the executive authority itself had said when we met to say it's important that we realize that with Parliament you cannot say as the industry practice you need to have 55% towards operations and 45% of your budget towards personnel. In Parliament it's the inverse because we work through people. So that's an area we're worried about and we are addressing incrementally. The quality and how many, yes. We had a discussion, I know, with the researchers and colleagues in core business to say questions are answered, responded to. What we need to look into is to look at the quality thereof. The most critical thing would be the system we put to assess what we as officials may not necessarily dictate what the quality is like, but we can possibly have a methodology of assessing to what level is the executive accounting sufficiently to members of Parliament. And that needs a bit of thinking. I'm sure Dr. Gabriel, my colleague Leon, he can say a little bit about that. We can even think of how other parliaments work around what is the quality of responses and does it answer the fundamental question raised by the member. I must be honest that we haven't necessarily tracked that. We have otherwise, but we do have data that shows the number of questions that have been responded to and the number of questions that have not been responded to, and we'll definitely pull it together and share it with honourable members. Effectiveness of tabling and compliance. Yes. What the weakness was is the extent to which we ensure that our submissions, let's talk about a third quarter report. The FMPPLA has got a time frame, and it says once the report has been completed, that's a quarter, in 5 days, it should be tabled. But the work of Parliament is not as predictable as that. So there's an area where we need to work backwards to allow our executive authority not to be just rubber stamping. So what it meant from our side is to plan backwards and say what is the 30 days and what do we count into the very days that have to be, the report has to be submitted and it has to be tabled. I must honestly say in the past, at least the first quarter report, this year, the current financial year, we are starting to crack that and we have put a system that we can use effectively. It really means some of the time running after walking the report and ensuring that it is actually tabled in time. But through you, Chairperson, what makes it even very complicated, we have agreed with our audit committee that when it's tabled and submitted, that quarter report has to be audited. Because if it's not audited by our internal auditors, not external, internal auditors, if it's not audited, by the time our internal auditors come in, there's actually an incoherence or inconsistency. So we have to build in also a time frame within which we include our internal audit. So by the time we present here, it's an audited, internally audited quarter report. These, to us, it's elements of growth, and we're beginning to agree with ourselves as senior officials that we need to put together a proper system of reporting, strategy, collating information, and a whole range of things. So it's an area we definitely are looking at. The communication strategy.
I'm sorry to do this to you.
Yes,
I think
yes.
It's fine. You know, I'm concerned that you've done about 10 minutes already, just on this one, and I'm looking at our members. I don't mind us sitting here until 9 o'clock, quite frankly. I don't mind. But either we're going to limit our questions, or we're going to put you under a little bit of pressure to be, without necessarily taking away your ability to answer to Parliament, because it's important. But I'm just looking at from a management point of view, because I'm sure there's going to be many more questions that other members are going to ask. So we're either going to limit our questions. Fine, we will try and do that. But if you could just wrap up on this round, Sustainability will have a second bite later on, but if you could just wrap up on these ones. I'm going to be a bit strict, otherwise we'll be here until midnight. Okay.
Chair, through you, the one question of communications and media, I think what we want to do is we'll go back and do our own analysis and see how we've covered this area and provide a report. The CFO can speak on the last question, doing business with Parliament.
Who's doing business with Parliament?
Thank you. Thanks, honourable members. Indeed, there is a company called Provox, but at this stage I don't have the name of the director, but we can submit that to committee. But what normally actually happens is that each and every supplier, when you want to do business with us, you need to submit a declaration form where you have to actually declare either you are a member or not. And then it appears on this case that declaration is not disclosed that they was a member of Parliament. And it is that area where, Chair, I must say, it's a weakness as well that we need to work on to ensure that we don't only depend on the declaration, but there must be systems that we can be able to put in place to, over and above that, be able to fix that. Thanks.
No, let me take you out of your misery, CFO and Stenhagen. Indeed, there was. I asked the Auditor General's office for it. It was a member of the DA. that did business as a director. He was a director and his company did business with it. And I think the more important question that we should be asking is, what have you done about it? It wouldn't be proper. I'll share the names with you. That's why I asked for it to be made private. You want me to share the name?
Yeah.
That's fine. All right. Then the member that did business was Mr. Matao. And it was to the tune of about 22,000 rand. We've got the letter. And if you want us to give it, we'll give it to you. I'm saying the more important question is, it's clearly a breach. What is it that you are doing to make sure that it doesn't happen? It's not important who the member is. It's just that we've broken the principle. But if you want to have the names, honorable members, then it is Mr. Matao from the DA. You're still a member, yes. Have you got anything in place, CFO, to make sure that we remedy this going forward for anybody and everybody? I think that's the more important question. CFO?
Sir, that is an area that I have to confess we need to invest on what processes we can put in place. We're exploring that space so that we do not necessarily just depend on the declaration form.
Yes, sir.
But the main point is internal parliamentary processes that must deal with this as well. It's an ethics, there's an ethics committee, etc., that needs to look into these matters. So, you know, it's not good enough just to find out about it in an annual report. And the party's chief whip should have been informed. The ethics committee would need to be informed so there can be a proper and full investigation. We can't just leave these matters to linger on annual reports. We have processes in parliament, and they must be applied without fear and favour. Whoever the member is, whether it's a member of the executive, whether it's an ordinary member, irrelevant to the party.
I think that's useful. When you do your second round, honourable members, rather than just lamenting, having heard what they said to us, whatever it is that they say to us, I think we must come up with proposals, because we've got the political authority also here, so that collectively we fix it up. But there's a proposal that it can't just be something that you go and look for theoretical solutions for. Take them through the processes. There must be procedures in Parliament, and you take them and you'll come and account to us, what have you done about it? Thank you very much. You'll have a second round later, Honourable Steenhuisen. Can we ask Honourable Singh, can we agree, Honourable Singh, can we limit it to maybe three questions at max? You'll answer and we'll see how it goes the second round.
Thank you, Chair. This is 1A. No, I'll do three questions. Chairperson, thank you, and I recognize the speaker and the chairperson of the NCOP. Welcome. In your slide on overview of financial position, you referred to post-medical provision made for former members of parliament, 855 odd million. Now, I know I raised this before, that this parliament and our budget is carrying this cost. Now, is Treasury aware that we are doing this? Because if there's any argument for us to get more funding, I mean, this should be a classical argument. Instead of recovering from the provincial legislatures, we should be recovering from Treasury as a globular amount. But having said that, I know there's a committee, and Honourable Waters is on the subcommittee dealing with the PALMED. There is an issue about PALMED. And whether or not we can look to other service providers, and you know, maybe we'll get better value for money on the same terms and conditions. Is this something that we can be looking at? And this arises from chairperson, co-chairpersons, on the committee that deals with members' interests, that is chaired by Honourable Tadiza. I mean, there were some proposals that were agreed to there by a multi-party committee. And I don't know how that fits into this committee of ours, because there were some very good proposals with regard to air travel for former members and to PALMED. So I just need some comment on that. Then secondly, when I look at the annual report, page 165, I think your narrative on overtime is just a bit misleading, because when you just look at it, which I looked at in the House yesterday, and you see overtime as a percentage of personnel expenditure, when I saw 55.33%, I said, wow, that means you know, the salary and then 55%. But I think it's a percentage of the total overtime. So maybe you need to correct that narrative, because I understand it. It's on page 165. Then, Chair, the other question I would like to ask is stakeholder perspective, and I'm glad now that we've got this report, and only 9.75% of the population are aware of the business of Parliament. But yet every second or third person I meet on the street, and some of us unfamiliar, the speaker is very familiar face, say, hey, we saw you on TV, you know, they remember. So I don't know whether we must re-look at whether 408 is the right channel for the business of Parliament to be exposed to the South African public. SABC is a public broadcaster, and maybe we need some engagement in that regard with SABC. So that's my second question. And I'll stop there. Okay. Chairperson, with regard to the PBO on page 56, the budget office. Now, I was involved in the legislation when we set up, you know, and we've got legislation which allows Parliament to question and oversee the budget. We're not doing that adequately, because the PBO is only offering a service, as you indicate here, to the Standing Committee on Appropriations and some committees. But yet, when it was established, it should be offering, as we've seen elsewhere, a service to members who want to query something. So I just want to know whether or not are we thinking about beefing up the capacity of that office in any way, so that as ordinary members, we can benefit from the services that they offer us. Thank you.
Over to you, Secretary Acting. Four questions. Post-retirement cost is Treasury aware, overtime narrative correcting, stakeholder survey, and PBO, what is their role and how do we improve them to help us better?
Very quickly, yes. The first one, the Speaker and the Chair have written to the Minister of Finance on the fact that we carry budgets that they should actually be processing, like they are doing the GEPF. And this is the second letter, and the technical people are quite aware, they are working with CFO, and largely that budget will have to move away, and it shows the real budget of Parliament. The second question you're asking about, yes, we will look at the page 165 on how we narrating over time. Stakeholder, we do have a proposal on how we can move that channel from 403 because it's a paid channel. And indeed, our data shows that people say they can't access that because it's on a DSTV channel. PBO, indeed, originally PBO, the challenge is that when the PBO was established, Parliament didn't apply for a budget to be revisited to include the cost of PBO. So over many years after the establishment from 2012, it has been funded out of the retained funds. Now we've exhausted those, we've now quantified and actually budgeted for it, put it as a request to National Treasury. Because for them to operate at that level, honourable member, they have to. The capacity should be between 25 and 30 economic analysts. And I think they're only sitting at 11. Thanks.
So answer one comment before I move to Waters. Do you want to make a comment? You, yeah.
No. I'm satisfied with the answers for now, Chair. I'll come back to
you. Thank you, Honourable Waters.
Chair, thank you. And thank you to the Acting Secretary for the presentation. You asked for a solution, or solutions, Chair. With regards to the quality of questions asked, replied to in Parliament by ministers, written and oral, and particularly written, what the House of Commons has done, they've set up a committee of MPs, that MPs who feel that questions have not been adequately responded to can write to the committee. The committee then, if they feel it's warranted, because obviously they don't want to make it a political football, but if it's warranted, that minister is called before the committee to explain him or herself. Or if even questions are taking undue time to get to be replied to, as in case of some ministers. And I think maybe it's something we can look at. I know it's not an administrative issue, it's more political, but it's something we can look at. And just on that, if I may link it to that without my first question, Chair, please, is slide 17, box, I won't say bullet, but box 4, you say one of the targets that's been met is the revised parliamentary program to give greater emphasis to oversight and accountability. And you say we've achieved that. How did you measure that exactly? If you can unpack that and explain how you decided you achieved the parliamentary program being more accountable. Okay, thank you. Then, Chair, my first question is to do with the compensation for members. There was my first, because that was linked to the quality of...
Five.
Okay,
all right.
Sorry. All right, thank you. Because she's limiting us to three. Things want to end. Thank you. Okay, compensation to members, Chair. And then there was an underspend of 93 million. The acting secretary said that amount was then sent back to the NRF. However, according to the figures we have, only 62.8 million was sent back. So there's a difference of 31 million. Can you explain where that 31 million is and why wasn't it sent back or returned to the NRF? Then as far as, I think it would fall under Program 1, and that's got to do with performance contracts. As you know, the Secretary to Parliament did not have a contract at the last financial year. As far as we know, we were informed of this 3 weeks before the end of the financial year, which is the year we're covering. Is that reflected in this annual report? Because I don't see it. Okay, I see someone nodding around, but if you can refer me to that. And the fact is, given that the head of the institution didn't have a performance contract, or be it signed in the last, the 11th hour of the year, how then does one get a clean audit? That's what I would like to understand. I don't understand, you know, because it seems that there's been a transgression of the law by the head of the institution, and it doesn't reflect here. That's my second question. My last question, Chair, has got to do with transfers to non-profit institutions, which are political parties. And according to the budget, we exceeded that by 8.8 million rand. Now, given the austerity measures that are in place, on what basis was extra money allocated to political parties? And who took that decision to allocate extra money from what was budgeted? So those are my three questions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let me just pre-warn the Auditor General's office. I think the question of why do you give a clean audit can't be answered by management, because it's your opinion. So you'll answer that question. Why was it a clean audit if indeed there were prescripts that were not met? So just be warned that you will come in after the secretary. Secretary?
Ask Rashida to talk on the how the joint programming or how the oversight, how did we say we met the targets on oversight, Rashida?
Evening members, presiding officers, colleagues. I think the reference here to the parliamentary program is actually the program that's put together by the respective programming committees of the NNSOP, and the fact that more time has been allocated to oversight activities. And we can refer to the number of oversight weeks, NTOP, taking Parliament to the people, with a program that you go back to where you've been before in terms of taking Parliament back to the people. The program has been devised to allocate more time to oversight activities.
Then the next question is, CFO, we'll talk to the 31 million that we've not returned to the NRF. CFO.
Thanks, Chair. The 62 million that is reflected on the financials on page 111, it's for the previous financial year. And the 93 is going to reflect in the 17-18. So by 31st March, that 93 is what had to be surrendered. But the payment actually will then happen in the following period, in the following financial year.
Location. Transfer to parties.
The transfer to parties is mainly based on the policy in terms of the representations of parties within the houses. Now that is calculated solely based on how much each and every party is entitled to based on the number of seats. It is one area, Chair, that also has been underfunded for all the previous 3 to 4 years, which is one of the things that when we do an adjustment, when we ask for adjustment, that is one of the areas that needs to be addressed. So the issue there is mostly an underfunding on the transfer to political parties, which therefore becomes a problem since the allocation then has to be based on the number of representations of the parties. It is an issue that was also escalated to the Minister of Finance in terms of ensuring that party the transfer is actually revised. Thanks.
Thank you.
One more question. I see Waters is not quite happy. I thought he was answering the question differently. I thought you were asking why did we increase it. But it's fine, we'll get to that question. But the other question was, where in the annual report does it reflect the issue around non-performance? Is it anywhere? Just give the page and then you'll answer why. With that, if it is there, why do you still give them a clean audit?
In non-performance, in terms of performance agreement?
Yes, for the
page
check.
16. Slide 16. And that's the one we're talking about, non-compliance with prescripts and regulations. And we didn't meet that target. It's a minus 40% variance. And in the detailed financial management report from the OAG, it is outlined there as a matter of emphasis. Matter of emphasis? I might be using the wrong word here. But as they did flag it in the report, not the annual report, but the financial management report. And there we do accept that we didn't meet that target of 10. Given the compliance that we have to have adhered to.
You'll have another bite. Just now, Auditor General, you want to answer that question?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. So just to respond to that question, I think I want to clarify, as auditors, when we express an opinion on compliance, we don't say absolutely Parliament has complied with all the legislation. And I think I refer back to page 157, paragraph 18 and 19 of our report, where we indicate when we audit compliance with laws and regulations, that's based on specific subject matters. And then further on, we also indicate we give limited assurance on those specific subject matters. What I can indicate with this specific finding, we did raise it in the management report of Parliament to indicate the performance agreement has not signed. We've noted for 17, 18 years, performance agreement has been signed in April 2017. So from that perspective, it was an item that we foresee that stayed in the management report and did not escalate in the audit report, which is basically compliant to how we audit all legislation, including Parliament, when it comes to the FMPA.
Last bite, Honourable Waters, on any of these, if there are any?
Yeah, just on transfer to political parties, Chair.
What page was that?
Or to
the
slide? 27 of the Secretary's presentation.
Okay.
So 394 million was allocated and 403 was spent, so extra 8.8 million. And I hear what the CFO says, that the proposal or the adjustment was sent to the Minister of Finance, and I take it he agreed to it, right? I mean, obviously. But the fact is the motivation must have come from somewhere. And I just want to know why and where did it come from? Did it come from yourself? Was it a political motivation from a political party? So where was the motivation to increase this amount to political parties, given the austerity measures that have been put in place throughout the rest of Parliament? Why do political parties get preference over extra funding?
Yeah. It's a political question and you don't want to, I'm sure our political authorities will answer it later on. But if you start thinking about it, we can give you time to confer about it. My understanding is that we budgeted 394 and we expended 400 because we went to ask for additional money. The question is, why did we go and ask for additional money? You don't have to respond to it now, you can respond later. I have recognized Sheikh Imam and then Honorable Isaac and then Debir. We'll come to you for the next three. In the same order, three questions maximum, and you'll have a last bite after that. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairs. My first one is on the international parliamentary delegations. And I know you're repeatedly sending and funding these processes and these delegations. What mechanisms have you got back for these delegations when they come back to report to Parliament? In my view, there's very little or nothing. So I'm not sure what is the purpose of this funding and sending these delegations out there when they come back. Absolutely nothing has happened. Nothing. No domestication, no reporting, absolutely nothing. The second thing is this, in terms of the coming back to the issue of political party funding, which I think I've spoken about previously, clearly, Parliament has failed to be able to do oversight, whether these offices exist, whether staff exist and anything. I want to know whether you would consider, since it's taxpayers' money and it's political funded by Parliament, that the AG's office does an audit on these things, this political party funding for parties, rather than us all having independent auditors. Maybe that might give more credibility to the process and ensure that monies indeed are being spent in the way that it is supposed to have been intended. The other one is this, the issue of all the irregular expenditure and things. I would like to know, what have you done about it? Has there been any consequences, and what processes have you followed to actually regularize these irregular expenditures? I'll stop there for now.
Yeah.
Over to you, ma'am.
Okay. The delegations, what's happening now with international relations is we're ensuring that each of the visits, there is a report that is produced, and that report has to be processed through the committee because the members will come from their respective committees. We provide support in terms of the researcher that can put together that report, and it gets sent to the respective committees. Naturally, some of these reports have to be tabled at the either of the houses, and the secretary of the respective house will have to monitor that. And we've started doing that to strengthen and make sure that there is benefit from the various delegations, Honourable Member. On the constituency offices, it is true we need to set up a system. What we do have a policy that says each party, the accounting officer must make sure that they have the details of the constituency office and make sure that it exists. And it is correct that we have not gone out there to go and establish the existence of this, which we need to correct. So it's something that we'll have to embark on. And each time we are being asked a question about the existence and so on, the only monitoring mechanism that is happening is the FMO ensures that the allocations are reconciled and they're audited and reported back so that the money that's expended, it is reported on. And where the party cannot present papers and everything, the FMO or the CFO does hold back the funding of that respective party. But that's not refined, as member indicates, and it's an area we should refine. Irregular expenditures. What was the question, by the way? I forgot the detail. What has happened? Oh, we are the consequence management. First and foremost, that's the reason why Secretary did establish the governance committee, because we allow for each individual official to come and make a presentation on how the irregular expenditure occurred. We found that some of the time they are quite straightforward, wherein there was oversight in a deep rural area where there was no opportunity of three quotations and members are out there. There is an explanation and a report that explains the circumstances thereof. And some are very straightforward. Others we actually do, each manager has been given a letter to say you have to give a warning, remediate and support. And then of course, where there are issues that look like they need to be dealt with forensically, we do ask our internal audit to do an assessment of whether it's weak internal controls or it's downright misbehavior. That's the type of report we provide to the executive authority, because before they write them off or they agree to the writing off, we are requested to provide valid evidence and information around those irregularities. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. At this stage, in the last financial year, in terms of these irregular expenditure, is there anyone that have been dealt with, have been warned? Has there been any consequences specifically for any of them? If them, how many of them? And then my other issue was in terms of the Auditor General's things. Would Parliament ever consider ensuring that the AG's office, with due respect, ma'am, audits all parliamentary funds given to political parties? Not private auditing or their own auditing, but Parliament itself in terms of the Auditor General auditing those fundings for political parties. Thank you.
Okay. let's just understand the last part. The Auditor General does audit, because that is given via the IEC and to Parliament directly. That is already being done. What the Auditor General doesn't do is that he doesn't become the external auditor for the political party. That's what he doesn't do. And if you're asking whether we should consider him being the external auditor for political parties, that's a different question.
Thank you, Chair. That's exactly what I'm saying, that we need at Parliament to have an audit system that will be able to do the auditing rather than political parties having their own external auditors. And the reason for that is so that there's greater compliance in terms of, because we have a twofold problem there, Chair. One is it's not being monitored and evaluated. Some of them don't even exist. Okay, that's the first thing. And I can tell you, and I've said this repeatedly, sometimes with due respect to the Auditor General, you know, if you got your own auditors, you tell them what you want to tell them, and you'll get a clean audit. There's no doubt about it. If you know how to manipulate the system. So I'm saying, can we not put a mechanism in place at Parliament in terms from the AG's office, even if it's a separate thing, so that it's dedicated to be able to audit? Now, that does not take away the responsibility of the Auditor General. Because remember, right now it's being audited externally. It comes through to finance. They look at it, it's fine, they're paying. I'm saying no. Let that part of that auditing that's being done by political parties, let it be done in-house, since it's political funding from taxpayers' money from Parliament.
Shaky Mom, you know, we're busy with funding of political parties in my other life. I suggest you bring that proposal there, and you don't bring it here, because it really doesn't belong here. That's a political decision. Is there anything you want to answer, ma'am? Yeah?
Additional point. I think what we will do with the question raised by Honourable Member Waters, we will write a response to be transferred to a non-profit organisation. The $395.4 million that he raised, we will write a response on it. Is it Honourable Senator? Yeah. Okay. We will write a response properly on that one.
You're not going to write to Honourable Waters, you'll write to the committee, and you're going to have to do it to the committee within the next 7 days, because it will influence our report. So you don't have an open-ended. You write to us. If we're happy, it doesn't come. If it doesn't happy, we'll report accordingly in our report. Thank you very much. And then can we...
The one other question that I have. Has there been anyone that has been disciplined in terms of non-compliance, irregular expenditure? Has there anybody? I don't want names, but have there been how many of them?
Officials that were given written warnings and final written warnings, yes.
Sorry, so Joe, at the next, can we just have the number of... And I'll tell you the reason for that is, Chair, so that we can follow that up, so the very same people, and that's what we find all over, seem to be doing it a year in and year out, so that we can ensure that those that have been warned will not get the next chance. Thank you.
Could you give us in writing the names? We will be responsible as how we deal with it. But if you give us the names, I think it's correct. We can't have repeat offenders. We want to know that it's Vincent today. If it's Vincent again next year, then it's a problem. Will you do that? Thank you very much. The Right Honourable Isaac.
Great, Chairperson. Thanks for the opportunity. Chair, you see, this is what happens when you're like number four, number five down the supply chain line. So you find most of your questions have been raised and somewhat answered, and some not so comprehensively. But nevertheless, for the sake of time, my colleague covered the issue on performance in terms of targets. So I'm not going to go into detail, but the particular one that I think, you know, on the slide, program two on the administration, where I think only 60% of the targets were met. Just to be concise, you mentioned that the target was not met due to ineffective mechanisms for processing tenders and supplier payments. Now, obviously, you know, it's a bit of a statement that sticks out due to ineffective performances. So perhaps, Chairperson, just to be concise, in your replies, maybe you just want to touch on these ineffective mechanisms and how you propose to deal with them going forward.
Well, because you've only got one, let's move on to the beer. You answered the beer. I don't have three questions. No, I've lost my one. Honourable Chair, to the Acting Secretary, to the leadership of Parliament, we must thank you for the calm you brought to this institution, seeing the turbulence that was here among staff members. I think we are functioning a bit better than a few months ago. Turning to page 172 of the annual report, referring to sick leave utilization, the success of any institution or business is how healthy is the people working there. Referring to your high skilled production level C and level D, the total of the employees in those two categories, total 755. Now, how did this affect the operations of the institution? I know in winter time we get the flu here in Cape Town. I'm one of those people. And it's quite an operation to get it out of your body. But how did this affect the operations?
Is that the only question? Okay. Just that one. Okay. Honourable Matara, do you have any?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I have a question regarding the overspending on compensation of employees. You've overspent 102 million, but you haven't reported it as unauthorized expenditure because, of course, it exceeds your budget. And I'd like to understand why haven't they reported it as unauthorized expenditure? And linked to that, maybe just a question of clarity, what is compensative circumstantial compensation of employees? Because you spent figures in thousands, 10 million. On page, if you look at page 136 of the annual report, compensative and circumstantial, if that can be explained. Now, there's I know the secretary, acting secretary, you've explained how the alignment of the work done in the APP has caused some of the issues that you've raised as reasons for variance in your annual report. So there's discrepancies, or not discrepancies, just the misalignment of the APP and the annual report and how you had to adjust it. But there's also, in a number of instances, there is what you have targeted in your APP has been adjusted in your annual report. And I'm not sure which or what are the reasons that you've done that. And I can give you examples. For instance, and I'm going to speak to core. Yeah, let me speak to core business. On page 18 of your slides, your first policy advice within 7 days average, in your APP is 5 days. You've adjusted it in the annual report to 7 days. You've done the same with Hansard report. In the APP, your target is 2 days. You've reported it or adjusted it in the annual report as 5 days. And then when you're reporting it against the adjusted target, not your targets in your APP. So if I can get an understanding of why you've done that adjustment in the annual report. Then another adjustment, or let me say a report discrepancy, is the you've reported, okay, I just want to check the program. In program one is administration. What you've targeted as a percentage of total savings, you've targeted it against the total operating budget, and you've targeted your target saving was for 15%. That's in your APP, but the figure you've revised it downwards to 1%. In your annual report. So there's again a discrepancy between the target in the APP versus what you've stated as a target in the annual report. And then in this operating budget saving, or this saving, you have claimed the saving is going to come from the operating budget and not the total budget. That's again, it's in your APP. As opposed to the total budget. So when we look at your performance, it was difficult to gauge, are you using the APP, are you using the annual report, because you've done revisions. And then especially this one of the saving, you have targeted saving against your, you've accounted for a saving against your operational budget, whereas you have a target of saving against the total budget. And why have you then adjusted it or changed it? Thanks, Jay.
Thank you very much, Acting Sec.
Indeed, I think even to add, when we did the strat plan 4 years ago, we even put these targets at 100%. But then when we came back, we realized that the institution is such that 100% is almost like an ambition, and the speakers. 100% is an ambition, and we must keep to that. However, the systems and the mechanisms within Parliament to ensure that we meet those targets were quite deficient. So we kept on saying we aspire for that. However, in reality, it was going to be complex to actually meet those. Let me give an example. We had put 15%, you're correct, in terms of savings. However, when we came back, we realized that for us to change from towards automation and not use print, to reduce the printing of ATCs, to reduce the printing of, not eliminate, but reduce printing of HANSA, first, we undermine the fact that we have to explain to members first that we will not be printing HANSA and acknowledge and get members to accept and concur with us. So we undermined the what one would call change management. And we then had to sit to say we cannot fail completely. Reasonably, what is it that we can do to put our targets not at a mediocre level, but to move them up, but to a point where we know progressively we have to improve. And that's the reflection. The challenge of what we didn't do, which is correct, often when you do that, we needed to have changed the whole strategic plan of 5 years. And the discussion we had was the timing to do that would be around the mid period, which we are doing now. So we obviously started with ambition and then came back with reality. An example also to add, we had put even a timeline for legal advice. We had put, I think, 7 days or something very ridiculous. When we came back, we realized that the complexity of legal advice and ensuring that you get good legal advice cannot be attached, and a day cannot be attached to. But at least what can be attached to is the milestones towards achieving. So it's those challenges that one we picked up after we had put together this ambitious strategic plan. Hence, we are revising it. And we did submit to the auditor, Audit AG, before they came to say, look, we have to review. And they did raise some of the things that we can't just keep changing targets, otherwise it's going to be a moving target that we'll never reach. So we acknowledge that, and I'm sure we don't have a direct answer to say, why did you do it? But we can concur that it's the weakness of the system. And finally, Chairperson, this is the first ever five-year horizon strategy of Parliament. Parliament has always planned on year, from 20 whatever. So I think that's what the question is. I've addressed all those questions around time.
No, you haven't.
There
was a question around the targets of the tender. There was a question about sick leave. There was a question about why was compensation overspending not regarded as irregular? All those things. Or unauthorized, I beg your pardon.
CFO.
You want us to repeat them for you?
CFO has got those ones to address them. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Let me start with the one of this compensative and circumstantial. That mainly refers to the staff overtime that was worked for the whole year, including the acting and shift allowances. So that is just a separate disclosure just to break down for users of the financial statement. And then the compensation of employees is aggregated because at the end of the year, the total over and under spent, since we the financial statements are prepared for the entire board, then both the compensation and other compensation for members, which is an over, nets off to an underspending of 34 million. Which therefore, then as a result, then we wouldn't have classified an individual economic classification as an unauthorized expenditure, unlike if it was the total balance.
No, Chef, you know what the member's asking, and maybe I should ask it. You see, we give you a budget for salaries for staff, and there is a budget for politicians. If you overspend on your staff, you can't substitute it by politicians because this is an environment. And if there's an environment, you must come in and ask for permission or explain it. I think that's what she's asking.
I get the question.
No, that's what you're saying is you can't say at the end of the day because then nets out. We shouldn't be worried about it.
Chair, on page 112, the budget that you have of 778, that is the actual appropriation from Treasury only. And then the 808 that you see as the spend, perhaps the question would be then, if you have overspent by so much, then why did we get the money? What we are doing there on that comparison, we are only comparing the spend against what was received for the year. Excluding, because what also happened that you have got unspent funds of the previous financial year, which in terms of the Act is supposed to be part of your spend for the following year. So that is what, so if we include that, then there wouldn't be that overspending. It is because you had 166 million in the previous year, which was in your reserves. That is what you then use in order to compensate for the difference. And that is the part that we've always said, we cannot sustain that going forward. It's mainly because if we keep on spending our unspent funds, there shall be a time when we don't have that, and how do we augment that? And that is what has actually been also discussed with the Minister of Finance.
All right.
Chair, I think I didn't answer the question on sick leave, if you allow me.
Yeah, answer it.
Indeed, you're correct, Honourable Member. We've done an age analysis of our staff. In fact, on a daily basis, if not every second, third hour, we're signing off people who are ill, and people are taking early retirement. And it is causing a strain, particularly in the catering area. So it's an area that when we finish with our re-engineering and reprocessing, we need to refine the levels of employment as well as the recruitment in those areas that are critical. So there is pressure. Even in committees, there is pressure. Burden of illness. We have a climate study that we have now instituted that's going to help us with the burden of illness in Parliament. Some of the people have been here for 10 years and they joined Parliament at 19 and they are really, really on their teeth. So it does impact on production. You find people working more hours than others. Thanks.
And you're happy that when people come with their sick leave certificate, they don't come with it from a Cocotella doctor. It happens all over that people come with sick leave. I think that's the question I want to ask you. Are you comfortable that sick leave is legit sick leave?
I can respond that our wellness, we have a doctor. Once we see a pattern of sick leave and certificate, we actually get our doctor to verify. So we do have that. And then the wellness has to kick in counselling and ensuring that that person is addressed individually. So we have a counseling service, we've got psychological service, we have a physiotherapy service, we have the services under wellness in HR. Thank you.
All right.
Chair. Thanks very much. I've got one question. In terms of condonation of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I just want you to explain to us the process that you follow up to the condonation itself.
There's a condonation where it's flagged, even the post. Sometimes we claim things that we've done like 3 months without official approval. The system is simple. The immediate manager has to request the particular official to provide a written submission on why and how.
and we then use internal audit to assist us. But the is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Are you asking
about fruitless and wasteful, not irregular?
Oh.
Because in your presentation earlier on, you referred to having condoned some fruitless and wasteful activities.
No, we have the governance committee. The first thing we look at is, has Parliament benefited? Is fruitless as a result of wastage, or is it as a result of not having followed processes and compliance and gotten approval at the right level of the delegation of authority? And if that is, if everything else is actually sorted out, we will look at whether was the wastefulness, was it because somebody stole or not? And if they've stolen or they've done and something wrong against the FMPPA, we need to report it. And people go through DC. We set up an inquiry and we set up a process of disciplining. That happened in the committees. We had 10 members of staff who were actually taken through a process of DC in light of the irregular expenditure. Then, thereafter, we have to then ask for the right authority to write it off.
We had a debate about that one, and we must maybe continue the debate. I mean, members of parliament feel, first of all, fruitless and wasteful, Auditor General will have to help us, means there was no value for money. That's why it was classified as fruitless and wasteful. There was no value for money to the organization. And the only way, from where I'm standing, you can write it off is if the person is perhaps deceased or is insolvent, then of course you can't recover that kind of money from that person. But I don't understand how we can condone fruitless and wasteful. What we are saying is that maybe you must come and explain to us what steps have you taken to recover that money. Because by the way, it is your duty, Secretary, to prevent fruitless and wasteful. It's not an after effect. So if you keep on coming to us and saying to us, this is what I've done, at some point we're going to say to you, we're going to charge you because you didn't prevent it. So let's have that discussion and see how we handle it. I think, okay, but can I have my name? You'll come in. All right. Okay, on that point, that's fine.
I don't want to interrupt you, please, Chair. I'm just saying that maybe it would be helpful if we got a schedule of it, itemized schedule of it in the interim that will inform that discussion. I'll support you.
All right. If you could just give it to us, just so that we clarify for going forward, how do we manage it, whether it's managed at the executive authority level, whether it's managed collectively. Let's have the children and have that discussion. Okay. Let me have my bias. Let me also speak, thank you on behalf of your staff. Let me tell you why I'm thanking you. It's not so nice when you're not here. I think it's here members are being very gentle. Normally they're very harsh with these people. So these people must thank you when we leave here. They've had it very easy today. Let me try and spoil the party. Let me try and spoil the party and go to page 140. Let's go to page 140 of your annual report and just explain to me. You have a contingent liability, and I understand the top 48 million, that's the no pay, no work, no pay type of argument. They don't understand. But then you've got something called other litigation of 10 million. That is, and you explain it by saying ongoing litigation in which Parliament could be liable. Can you just explain to us what that exposure is? Who is taking Parliament to court for what? We understand that it's not an expense now because it's only an expense when you lose it, but it should be in the interest of this oversight committee to know who is taking Parliament to court and for what. So that's the first question. The second one that I want to raise with you is on the next page, page 141. And if I'm understanding this incorrectly, Secretary, Acting Secretary, the Department of Corporate Governance owes Parliament 97,000 rand. And it seems to be owing Parliament 97,000 rand for catering. That's what it seems to be, if I read it properly. There's two questions that I'm asking you. Have they paid us since the date that we've signed it? And secondly, members of parliament is cash on delivery. We don't eat on scope. Why should government departments be allowed to spend 97,000 rand and we must fund it for them? So that's the second one that you must explain to us so that we can come to a recommendation. The third one that I want to raise with you is linked to, let's first go to page 109 and then I want to link it to your slide, seconds. 109 of your report, you know, if I read it correctly, it means that in 2017, we actually were in overdraft, for want of a better word. We had a deficit, isn't it? Our expenditures exceeded our income by 164,000 rand. Is that correct? 164 million, yes. Yeah, so we were 164 million rand in the red. And you seem to have recovered it by actuarial gains of 200 million rand. What were those actuarial gains that you recovered by 200 million rand? I'm asking this question in light of the CFO who just now said we can't continue to dig into our surplus and sustain it. So if we ran the organization at 164 million rand loss, and maybe it's a political question, Speaker, that might have to help us when we fight with the Office of the Treasury. Because what it means is that Parliament is at risk. If we don't have a surplus, it means that we can go out of business as Parliament. And that must help us. So if you could just explain those to us. Because you say, you see, I'm linking it to your goods and services, ma'am. You say on your slide, I don't know what page it is, you say on goods and services, the unspent funds will be available for next financial year. In other words, you underspent goods and services and you say, but it's not a problem, we'll use it in the next financial year. The reality is that you don't have funds for the next financial year. So how do you say to us on one page you're going to use it in the next financial year and you don't have funds for the next financial year? If you could just explain that one to us. Those are the three. And then just one, Speaker, again, I'm raising this with you, Speaker. If the Audit Committee was here, we would have raised it with them. You know, I took the liberty, Speaker, I took the liberty to read the report from the Audit Committee for this financial year and the report for the Audit Committee for the previous financial year. Chair, it's a cut and paste. Everything, including the attendance register. Who attended 7 times, who attended 6 times. There are 5 people in that committee. Now, it's not your fight, and if they were here, they would have explained it. But I want you to go to the reports, the Audit Committee reports. It's on page 161 in this financial year, and if you go to next financial year's one, really, it doesn't take rocket science to see that it's a cut and paste. There is no way that you can, for instance, have the attendance register identical last year and this year. Absolutely identical. They all attended 7, the same person only attended 6. You go to the bottom of that page, the committees of the view that continuous focus of our management is required to resolve the challenges, the bullet points are identical. Normalized labor relations, strengthen the performance, identical. Now, if the Audit Committee is going to provide this Oversight Committee with that quality of work, then we're going to have a problem. You can see that it was just maybe a changing a word here, changing a word there. That's why I'm saying it's not for you, but I do think, Speaker, that at a political level, we should have some discussion with the Audit Committee, because they're supposed to be quality assurance for us. They're supposed to be quality assurance for us, but look at the reports for 2015-16 and 2016-17, and if I'm exaggerating, I'm prepared to withdraw, but it really looks like a cut and paste from my side. So once you've answered those three questions, Speaker, we'll hand over to you and the chair, because we'd be done on our side of it, except for what we expect from you as secretary in terms of giving us information. You'll respond to those three, and then we'll give it to the speaker and the speaker and the chairperson to wrap up the proceedings for us. But over to you, sir, for those three questions.
I think the question on contingencies was asked in one of the meetings of the committee. And we did say that we do have the researchers that have actually gone to CCMA, and that case is with the Labour Court. And this is about the grading level, and I think the amount they offer was about 48 or 35 million. 35 million, yes. Of the fact that they've lost on their budget, their employment compensation, to grade them properly. So there's a group of them. And Parliament, yeah. And 10 minutes. Okay.
The 35 million we understand, because you've got two sets,
yes,
on page 61. You've got one that is that we understand is for the employees. But there's another one called other contingent liabilities.
Or the 9.5?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
What is that for?
Okay. We did explain it that there's an estimate in terms of legal and looking at the cases where either Parliament is cited as the first or second respondent and so on. Instead of budgeting for miscellaneous, which is not acceptable, we sort of look at the estimates of how much we would have spent if we were to be found, the cases were to be found against Parliament. So it remains an estimate. It's not expended until we are found to be liable for it.
Obviously, it was an estimate for the previous financial year. Do we have actual figures now of how much it has been expended?
I understand.
Do you have
the actual one? We don't have it here, but we will send it to you. Yeah.
More than just send it here, it's fine if we send it here. You know, it will help us if you tell us who. Because, you know, I'm looking here. 90% of the occasion speaker and chair when you go to court is because we've taken you to court as MPs, 90%. When I say not MPs, as political parties, that's why I'm interested. Because what this means is that we are actually crippling our own organization, and maybe we might have to find a better way, because there's this contingent of 10 million. If you lose, it's probably because you're going to have to pay legal fees for somebody here. Probably those gentlemen there are. So if you, that's what I'm saying, if you help us with that, we must do it. Because it's whilst people have the right to take us to court, but I do think at some time we mustn't shoot each other in the foot. And I'm not saying we mustn't do that. I'm saying if we have that, let's find a way of dealing with it. All right.
Chair, the other question you're asking for, I think the CFO can talk to it, because it's an issue that the audit committee talked about, and they referred to us as a going risk. And I'm sure the CFO can talk to it, or we can respond to it in writing. The audit committee, our audit committee.
Sorry, audit committee, I said, I was just raising it as a concern. I'm more interested in why do you give the Department of Local Government 97 million rand of free food? 97,000 of free food.
Chair, they did pay the money. The 97 was current as 31st March for the month of March. But subsequent to that, which is this financial year, then the money was paid.
Within 30 days?
Yeah, we can provide the...
No, I'm saying, was it within 30 days?
I'm not too sure that I will just...
Okay. No, I'm just raising it from a principal point of view, because that's what you take from members. Next payday, they pay it. It should apply also to government departments. All right. If you've answered those questions, I think you've then answered all. I mean, the audit committee is something that I think we'll take up at a different level. But Speaker and Chairperson, thank you very much. First of all, for availing yourself, I know it was from your initiative, but it really helps us. It helps us that we are able to talk to you directly. I think members have always said we should get the Speaker and the Secretary, I mean the Speaker and the Chair, to come to us occasionally so that we have the political discussion. And I think on behalf of the committee, thank you very much for this one. But we are giving you the floor. You understand how we feel, and we'd like you to close this session for us.
Thank you, Chair. The Honourable Sustain hasn't asked us about where the report from the Audit Committee is. which is looking at the issues around the Secretary to Parliament. We can confirm that we are supposed to receive that report on Friday. Our take with the Speaker is that once we have received the report, we must consider it. And depending on what is, because we have tried to keep away from the processes, the investigations, what we do know is that the matters which we referred to the Audit Committee increased whilst it was there. So we're not sure what the report is going to look like. But what we are sure of is we will consider the report. If the report says we must go the DC way, we will not waste time, we will go the DC way. We have been concerned, though, that it has taken a bit long, and we think that whatever it is, the decision we will come up with once we have received the decision, we must find as quick a way as possible. Now, one of the questions which was asked was, your people are always on sick leave. When things are not going well at any, whether it is in the household or at work, people tend to get sick. So if you look at last year, we definitely would have suffered from a lot of sick leaves because the morale at Parliament was very low. It's picking up and we're thinking that we need to do a little bit more in making sure that we normalize the labor relations at work. And therefore, ongoing sessions between NIHAO, senior management, the top leadership of NIHAO and ourselves is going on. We must also say that part of the questions which Honorable Mutara asked was that when we came here in 2014 and we looked, we actually, the Speaker and I said to the people who arrived at Target, we said, you clearly have never been a backbencher. You do not know the turnaround time of a parliamentary report, which must be written, must be brought back to the committee to be read, to be corrected, and then to be signed off. You cannot do that in 2 days. That Target was out. And that is why as we discuss the targets, they needed to be a revision. The Acting Secretary has also told you, Chairpersons, that, is it in September, that in the light of the cuts and the economy that is improving, we felt that we needed to have a relook at our five-year strategy and just to reprioritize what goes, what must we definitely fight for. And I think once we have finished that revised strategy and priorities must be brought to the committee, because it couldn't be that we would do the ostrich thing and pretend that we still have the war with all. The other thing is that you are right, we no longer have that thing where there are retained reserves. We are now at zero budgeting, which means from now onwards what we get, we must expend. But we have also been engaging with the minister. On Monday, we had a meeting which we think will begin to make sense, because when we started saying to him, this is the amount which is a direct charge, which actually should not be seen as part of our operating budget as Parliament. This is the amount which goes to the benefits of former members. So we then agreed that we need to actually have a budget which can come and look like a business budget that says, this is our budget, this is the operating part, this is the capital, and put it there, and have a portion that says, this is what we pay directly to members, and this is what we need to budget for, so that you continue to make the budget of Parliament less cumbersome, because when you listen to Treasury having cut without even talking to us, it's a decision which the executive is taking. It is taking X percent from everybody, and therefore Parliament must lose. It looks at Parliament and it says, you've got too many people on your staff, therefore you must cut these people. There is no proper engagement with us. There is no appreciation that some of the posts which have been frozen should really be unfrozen, because when you look at the capacity which we need as Parliament, some of the posts which have been frozen are actually strategic posts which shouldn't have been frozen. Now, our discussion also has been looking at our structure, and I'm sure you've looked at it. We're very huge in the middle. Perhaps rightly, because you need middle managers. They are usually your executives, really. Your top managers must be few because they are supervisors. But we have begun to say we need to relook at the structure, the figure of Parliament, and begin to really come back to ideally how many people do you want a manager to supervise, is what we have idea. That means you are going to be looking at the packages, you are going to look at benefits, but we must also say that part of the reason why you are getting maybe the high-skilled people prepared to stay in Parliament and the other people who you really need who are not staying is the cost of living around Cape Town. And we must be realistic about it, because you are actually failing to retain the skills you need, because the cost of living is absolutely hitting the roof in Cape Town. So we're looking at all of this, and we might come back and say we have finalized what we started in September, reprioritizing our plan. We think that even though it is still important for us, for instance, to represent you at the international forum, we might actually want to say no, but the emphasis of our budget should go in this direction rather than in that direction. So we'll still come back to you. And we might still have to take a beating from the committee when you say to us, no, but this is what you said you are going to do. But when you reprioritize because you've got a financial pinching issue, you clearly need to do what is doable with the little that you have. I thought I should just say that we are hoping that we get that report and that we move. We would want to really have a team that gels in Parliament. We want to have the stability. When we must tell you that 2014 to 2016 has been a very difficult year for the two of us, because we could not even focus on the strategic direction of Parliament. We were running from one fire to the other. And it is in the interest of Parliament to quell the fires, to make sure that things go well. And in that regard, the administration has done well. And perhaps we might, the two of us, again take a beating, because we've got piles and piles of policies which we must go through and get adopted, which will work towards harmonizing relations and processes in Parliament. Speaker, I don't know if I've left anything behind.
Siyabonga nathi, Sihlalo. Honourable members, we going. Oh, let me just make this announcement, and then we'll come to you, Honourable Senator. We next meet on the 15th to adopt a report on this hearing, 15th of November. So you will have until a week before the 15th of November to give us whatever information so that we can incorporate it in our report. We will meet on the 15th to adopt this report. We're also going to meet on the 15th, Secretary, to look at your midterm report. So, as is the practice, 7 days before the time. If we have all our information, so members can go through it. So please diarise the 15th for the midterm review, as well as the adoption of this report that we will submit to Parliament. Honourable Steenhuisen, sir.
Just two things, if I may, Chair. Obviously, just in response to the executive and the authority, and it's great to have them here. We don't often have them here, so it's good to have this exchange. But before I do that, I just want to say thanks to Mrs. Tiawa for, I think from our side. Every time that we've had a problem, we've been able to pick up the phone, you've been available, you've been able to help us resolve the issue. So from our side, thank you very much for you and your team for the work that you do. I do just want to touch on something that the chairperson of the NCOP said, because I think it's something that Parliament's going to have to grapple with at some stage. And in the midst of the current economic downturn, it's probably not the right time to be discussing it. But I think it's an existential debate about Parliament's role vis-a-vis the executive. And the inordinate power the executive actually has now to strangle Parliament if they wanted to. And I don't think it's a problem now, but you could end up with a situation 10, 15 years down the line where you have an executive in place that doesn't like the work that Parliament's doing. And it just simply says to you the 1 year, sorry, your budget's, we're cutting your budget in half. And you know, there's nothing you can do about it. So I think it is a debate that we're going to, and I'm glad that the chairperson of the NCOP has got us thinking about this. But I mean, it is a fundamental risk to the independence of this institution and the ability to do its work. And we've got to go cap in hand to the executive every year to buy money for us to be able to do our work. And I think it's something we're going to have to, and I say this is probably not the best time because of the austerity and the tight fiscal space. But hopefully when we're out of this time, it's a debate we're going to have.
No, thank you. We'll come to you. What we're saying from our side is that you're getting our blessings, that we can't rely, we can't be budgeted for as a department. We can't. And we don't interact with the National Treasury and so on. I think what we're saying from our side, we've got your back in this one. It can't be that we, because he who holds the purse strings dictates the direction, isn't it? They will strangle us. So I think that's what we're saying, but over to you, Mark.
No, actually, the Monday meeting was just on that. Very nicely, very friendly, but with us saying we are the legislature and we think the way the things have been done is wrong, cannot continue. We acknowledge that the economy is not doing well. In fact, we have a draft protocol between us and Treasury, and we're hoping that into the future we will not abruptly, but we will get to where Parliament can begin to get what it needs in a less boxing way.
To our friends from the media, thank you for being here. To our friends from the Auditor General's office, as always, thanks for your expert advice, and also to our research and content staff, and also to you, Speaker, Chairperson, and the admin. Thank you very much. We will adjourn until the 15th.
See you, Chair.
Minutes
I adopted as proposed.